This is KAZU in Pacific Grove, California. It is broadcast number 603, June 27th, 1983. I usually go over what we were discussing a year ago this evening to see how the news has shaped up in the past year. It'd be fun to do broadcasts going back to a year ago, 2 years ago, and 3 years ago on the same date. That would take up the whole hour, but it would be an interesting format. A year ago this week, broadcast number 551, I was talking about Raymond Donovan and his links to the organized crime families and articles from the New York Times and Wall Street Journal and San Francisco Chronicle suggesting that it's time for Raymond Donovan to go. Article in the San Jose Mercury linking him and his construction business to organized crime figures. Well, Raymond Donovan is still in the White House, and as I mentioned last week, Ronald Reagan owes his presidency to a network of the crime syndicate, and his campaign is run by Senator Paul Laxalt of Nevada, who is not bashful about his contacts with the organized crime figures. And so long as Frank Sinatra gives the songs and the inaugural ball and Paul Laxalt runs the campaign fund money for the Republican Party, and William Casey ran the campaign, financial campaign, for Ronald Reagan when he was involved with the Security Exchange Commission and Robert Vesco and Bernie Kornfield, there's no way to get the mob out of the White House, and Raymond Donovan is still there. Alexander Haig was gone a year ago today, and in came George Shultz, who at one time was Secretary of Labor, again working with Richard Nixon and the Teamsters and Frank Fitzsimmons and Jimmy Hoffa, the whole team, and he was from Bechtel organization, but he also had cabinet positions with Richard Nixon, which combined both the Nazis and the organized crime syndicate. Ronald Reagan was in Houston, Texas, and we talked about that last week in his visit to Houston. Edwin Wilson came home with $18 million, even though he'd been arrested in Switzerland. And I said a year ago tonight that Arafat would be sacrificed. The part of the deal of Edwin Wilson coming home was that Arafat would be sacrificed. And this week, Arafat was kicked out of Lebanon and Syria, and he was indeed given the boot. Israel was given the permission to go in and clean out the PLO and do the massacre, and there were controversial articles in the newspaper this week how the government concealed the General Accounting Office, the millions of dollars given to Israel to literally clean out those people over there in Lebanon. And in return for Israel continuing to be a military base to make war against the Soviet Union and to protect the Saudi Arabian families that are practically down on their knees, believe it or not, Israel will defend Saudi Arabia and help us crush or try to crush Israel. Jack Anderson had a story about the Saudi family and oil today. And I was talking about Edwin Wilson. And also, Roberta Calvi was dead in London June the 18th, and the original story was suicide. And a year ago, I was saying it was murder. It was cold-blooded murder. And this week, they were opening up the case in London again, and they said the water tide that went up to his body, it would have been impossible for him to have been there hanging at the time. He was brought there dead, obviously, and hung as the tide went out. It hadn't gone up a certain part of his body, and now they're just about agreeing all out that it is murder. So those are some of the things we talked about last year, but this year they're still in the news. And for some new listeners or people that may not always be aware of it, the names that I use and the incidences I use are carefully selected because they belong to a fabric of information that will always, in some shape or form, recur over and over again until those cases are settled. There are two short items I want to bring up before I get to one particular theme this evening and continue with Robert Byron Watson and Colonel Charles Willoughby and that can of worms, the fascist element in this country. There's a story. It called News Crews Expecting the Worst, Prepare to Cover a Major Earthquake in California. Sometime in August, I told you I'm going to do two or three broadcasts on the Olympic Games and the CIA and the fear that I have for what's going down in Los Angeles. But this was in the Wall Street Journal this last week, June 25th, 1983. And this is a story, in essence, what it says is all over Los Angeles, people are mystified, CBS Network News crew are suddenly taping scenes downtown and all over Los Angeles, and CBS has the most elaborate battle plan to cover the major California earthquake. They're getting ready for the big one. the Associated Press, United Press, CBS. But it was the instructions of the story that really scared me. They said that they're treating the big one as if it were a convention or the Olympics. Now, the amount of deaths in Los Angeles will be equal to the Civil War deaths. They're expecting hundreds of thousands. It says thousands and thousands will be killed. They're expecting something there. And what they want to show on the East Coast is what Los Angeles looked for or looked like before the big one. But what is so scary about this is that they have specific instructions that I think this writer from the Wall Street Journal caught on and put in the newspaper for you to see. They mentioned a particular man who would get out of the rubble. He's supposed to climb out of the rubble. Douglas R. Dowie, D-O-W-I-E. He's a former United Press international reporter. He's to climb out of rubble and head for the low-income South Central section of Los Angeles to see if looting erupts. Now, if that isn't racism, I mean, what of Century City or Mid-Wilshire or downtown, the high-rise, or the multinational investment of apartments down Wilshire Boulevard in Westwood? Are they making racism out of a, this is an event where thousands and thousands will be killed, and they want to see how a few black people looted the stores? Does that remind you when Martin Luther King was killed, how the black part of town of Detroit or Los Angeles or Washington was photographed, and Louis Tackwood in 1971 surfaced from the police department and told how agent provocateurs were sent as provocateurs to riot, but not to handle the emergencies? I have other articles on the emergencies. A particular man is to photograph that part of town. Now, how do they know he's going to be under rubble? The other thing that really was interesting to me was that they were supposed to go seven blocks or eight blocks, the reporters. They have a plan distributed to the Associated Press. An able-bodied reporter in Los Angeles Bureau is supposed to take his transistor radio and make his way eight blocks north to a building that houses the Pacific Telephone Microwave Transmission Facility. Now, how do they know that anyone will be alive eight blocks from that building? So that they have all these plans to show somebody what happened before and after. And I think they could drop a Nagasaki or Hiroshima. That would wipe out Ronald Reagan's mafia context in Century City for sure. All the banks, the Wells Fargo and Bank of America, clean them out. But what are they planning that they tell these people, you go eight blocks to here? What if that is all closed off? I mean, in other words, it was too specific for my satisfaction. I didn't like the words or going to the black part of town. I call this carefully planned racism, even at the time of tragedy. There's another story in our local newspaper that caught my eye. A gentleman who has a music school here in Monterey Peninsula called Heinrich Bender, B-E-N-D-E-R, former Africa Corps bandmaster, A-F-R-I-K-A Corps, K-O-R-P-S bandmaster, Heinrich Bender. He teaches at Monterey Peninsula College the third Saturday of the month, and he has a band, and he worked for Rommel's band. He worked first in Hesse in Germany, H-E-S-S-E, and in North Africa with Rommel. And by 1943, the Americans took him. Until the war was over, he came to the United States as a prisoner of war, but he was playing German music for the British Army Field Hospital. He worked with the Hitler Rommel Corps in South Africa and was brought to the United States. And what he wants to do in Monterey is to start a 201st Infantry Battalion of the California State Military Reserve Band. He wants a Monterey County band, having come from the German Army, degrees in German music, and he's a trombone player. He wants to have, with our military here on the peninsula, this band. He has a Bender School of Music. I remember in the book, Kurt Reese's book, Nazi Goes Underground, how they would take over the Bach festivals, which we have coming here pretty soon in another week or two, and the musical bands. And in that play, Good, that I referred to the story of how ordinary people become Nazis and rationalize. One of the things that Adolf Hitler did was from the music hall up to the string quartets of Brahms and Beethoven and Chopin and Wagner, the in between, every element of society had their particular German music. So I'm wondering if we'll have some Irving Berlin music or if we're going to have German music. And it just reminds me of things that I've read, it doesn't prove anything at all. And I don't even know how important it is or if it's happening all over the country. But I would like to think that Americans are making American band music for our 4th of July and not people that worked for Adolf Hitler and then moved to the Monterey Peninsula. Now, individually, you can teach the trombone, but stay out of the military. And obviously, he's been with the military ever since he was captured in 43 and has worked with the Americans. Now, continuing part three of the story of Robert Byron Watson, the fellow who was in jail in Florida and in federal prisons on some drug charges. He claimed he was framed. He worked with the gallery in Atlanta, Georgia, and Marietta, Georgia, where the mob, the syndicate, worked with Representative Larry McDonald, our most radical right-wing congressman at the present time. Larry McDonald's Western Goals has computers fed directly into the Los Angeles Police Department, into 50 police departments around the country. Partner with Roy Cohn, long syndicate associations, and Cohn with Permandex, the international outfit that killed John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King. Robert Byron Watson was in an art gallery where they were discussing the murder of Martin Luther King the next week. He had told his mother about this when King was murdered. He surfaced after committees began investigating these murders. He contacted Bernard Fensterwald from the Committee to Investigate Assassinations, and Bernard was with the CIA, but Watson didn't know it. And then when the House Select Committee on Assassinations was formed, he thought, now I will have a chance to tell the story, because they're going into the Martin Luther King murder, and these men also were talking about Sirhan and the Patsy, and it was a month later when Robert Kennedy was murdered, and they were talking about John Kennedy and laughing about that, too. So 2 weeks ago, I read to you a letter that Watson sent to me when I first heard from him in December of 1976. And last week, I shared with you information from David Wempel, another researcher, telling me what he had gotten from Robert Watson. But I want to just share a quick letter that he wrote to me in 1977 in March when the House Select Committee was doing their work. And he was so enthusiastic. And just to show you the kind of thing he wrote, I just wanted to share a few sentences. He said, "Dear Mrs. Bressel, on Friday afternoon, I was allowed to place one call. Therefore, I spoke to Mr. Dick Gregory. I was told that the book that he and Mark Lane are doing, they had gone to see Robert Watson. They had interviewed him on Martin Luther King. He said, I was told the book that they co-authored about me and the assassination of Martin Luther King will be coming out in a month. He was very excited about that. The name will be Codename Zorro, and needless to say, the book will provide me with quite a bit of publicity about what he was trying to tell people about the assassinations and the headquarters for these particular people in Georgia. He said, it expresses the issues involved in my incarceration in a federal prison and the issues arising out of my future testimony before the House Select Committee on Assassinations. I have been named as a key witness before the House Select Committee on Assassinations. Recently, I was advised that some representatives of the House Select Committee on Assassinations will be flying down to see me in order to speak to me about my future testimony before said committee. The day is close at hand when I shall again have the attention of the news media focused upon me, because earlier there were some articles in the paper in Atlanta, Georgia, about him. And he felt now the truth will come out. Well, one reason Robert Byron Watson stopped writing to me was I told him all along, don't trust Mark Lane, don't trust Dick Gregory. I've mentioned to you before the role that Sylvia Marr played in Accessories After the Fact or in her index, leaving out the people from Munich, Germany that came to General Walker and Robert Morris and the John Birch Society for the role that they played in the murder of John Kennedy. She left out about 29 names. And the important names to figure out who was behind the murder of John Kennedy. That's a very convenient index of names to leave that out and have people study history and go to those books. Well, Mark Lane and Dick Gregory went to see him. Dick Gregory was at my home and admitted he saw Robert Watson and they spent time with him. I said, why didn't you put anything in the book? He said, Prentice Hall wouldn't publish it. I've mentioned this to you before on broadcast, referred to it. They didn't mention him at all. He's a zero in the book. The House Select Committee came up with a final conclusion that they listened to Robert Byron Watson and ruled out what he said. They didn't investigate him. They didn't use him as a witness. There are volumes of the hearings. I have all the testimony. He was never called as a witness, and none of the figures from the syndicate were examined or questioned, and he was completely ignored, and he was totally crushed by it because the book came out, the committee opened and closed, and he had such anticipation that he lived in the land of the free in America, that the $6 million was to investigate, and he was just nailed. They didn't investigate. They covered up. They're geniuses at it. They truly are. And G. Robert Blakey and the whole committee ignored him totally. He didn't want to believe it, and so it's just a shame, but that's the way the cookie crumbles, and that's exactly what happened. I just wanted to share with you his optimism on the book and the committee, and then from then on, it was a downer because nothing happened. Now, last week, I briefly mentioned a subject of the posse comitatus because it was in the news, and there was a picture of Joe McCarthy in the newspaper, and I've been talking about him in conjunction with not only Richard Nixon, but Ronald Reagan and Robert Morris and Colonel Charles Willoughby. The article is called Militant Rightists. The Posse Comitatus boss claims big membership. This came out in the Monterey Herald and Associated Press Wire with a photograph of James Wickstrom holding a press conference. Now, I wanted to share some more of that article. The reason it came out was that Gordon Call, a member of the Posse Comitatus, who shot two federal marshals in North Dakota, had gone down to Arkansas and was in a barn with people not from the Posse Comitatus, but from another group. And they share and house each other, or people that have escaped from the law. And Gordon Call was murdered down in Arkansas, and his murder brought out information about James Wickstrom that is available some places, but most people are not familiar with it. Now, this article describes his location in Tiger Town, Wisconsin. That is the home state where Senator Joe McCarthy came from, where the top German American Nazis went back and forth for Germany and funded Joe McCarthy's campaign into the Senate when he got out of the Navy. This is the headquarters of the Posse Comitatus, C-O-M-I-T-A-T-U-S, in case you can't spell that or know, P-O-S-S-E. And James Wickstrom is the head of it. Its size, according to the news media, is unknown. I could spend 3 hours reading to you a list of organizations that I have at home that tap right into this organization. He has 570 acres in Wisconsin, and their vigilantism is legal. Only law is the Smith & Wesson. They teach armed surveillance. They're violently anti-black. They're anti-Semitic. They're anti-tax. They're anti-big government, anti-everything American stands for. And as I mentioned last week, they're anti-Ronald Reagan. And John Hinckley Jr. was a member of the Posse Comitatus. And if time, I'll read you some of the articles on that in this hour. John Hinckley was part of that outfit. And they're anti-Catholic, too. And John Hinckley's family are Protestants that were moving down. They worked with the CIA and World Vision and were moving down to Central America and have been active in government espionage, counterintelligence. Their organization was a front for activity in Southeast Asia and in Africa and Central America. Now, when Gordon Call was killed in Arkansas, his murder, according to James Wickstrom, brought in tens of thousands of new members sympathetic to the organization. I don't know if it did or not, but that's what he says. Now, the Posse Comitatus was founded in 1953. That's a while back. The Posse was formed in 1953, and I'm going to slip that time period into some chronology for you later. It's part of the Life Science Church. He runs a group called the Life Science Church, and the headquarters are there in Wisconsin, and it's tied into fundamentalist Christian religion. And they have, in this organization, Wisconsin, a computer that connects them, two computers that connects them to 50 states. Now, John Reese, who works for Larry McDonald, who I mentioned before, and Louise Reese, who works for Larry McDonald, he's an aide for Larry McDonald, and they run the computers for Western Goals that tap in to the Los Angeles Police Department, work with James Wickstrom and the Posse Comitatus and the far right-wing fundamentalist Christian groups. They're all part and parcel of the same project. The man who donated the land to Mr. Wickstrom is Donald Menishek, an unusual name unless it's a combination, M-E-N-N-I-E-C-H-E-S-K-S, Menishek's. And he gave the land, the 570 acres. They have a Christian Liberty Academy. And 400 or 500 people come every weekend. There's tanks and forests to learn to fight, to learn to be aggressive and protect this country for what they think it stands for. And that is pretty dangerous. Now, along with that article connecting this organization to something even much bigger, which takes us down to Dallas and the Kennedy assassination, is a story from the New York Times called Link Seen Among Heavily Armed Rightist Groups. This was June the 11th, 1983, by Wayne King. It's a two-page article in the New York Times, which makes the connections of Gordon Call to a Reverend William Gale. The New York Times says, whose military career includes service on General Douglas MacArthur's staff, supervising guerrilla operations in the Philippines during World War II. Now, Reverend Gale is a military officer who still keeps his military title, but he's a reverend, and he's formed his own church, a separate church. And there they teach how to make bombs, how to kill, how to ambush, and he gives lectures along with his friend from the Posse Comitatus. And they teach how to administer cyanide. Just to give you a little warm-up here, think of all the cyanide cases, and we'll go into those also, and how to do ambush and kill at night, how to give poisons, how to administer potassium cyanide and prussic acid, make blowguns, poison darts, wallet pistols, concealable weapons. A man that worked for them, a Mr. Saxon, S-A-X-O-N, runs his own training camp about 60 miles from where Mr. Gale was killed at the shootout. He was at the home and the barn of people who house the Posse Comitatus. And Mr. Saxon worked for the American Nazi Party, for the John Birch Society. That's Larry McDonald again, and Robert Morris, and H.L. Hunt, and the Minutemen. All of those people involved in the Kennedy assassination. And he worked with George Lincoln Rockwell. Lee Harvey Oswald had his name in his notebook at the time that he died, when Oswald died. But Mr. Saxon worked with all of these people, and the group is called the Identity. This is the absolute, it's known as the Identity, the Nazis, the Minutemen, the Birch Society, and they train, and Mr. Gale, who worked with Colonel Willoughby in the Philippines in guerrilla warfare, came to this country after the war and has set up in 50 states networks and also training camps in Colorado and Kansas and many of the states where the Posse also worked. These men worked together. And you remember John Hinckley in Colorado and also his Posse contacts in California. They have headquarters out here also. Now, the New York Times goes into the story of Gordon Call, how they were investigating his murder when they came into these links of the Nazi and the Klan and the farm protest movement. The use of armed explosives, grenade launchers, automatic and semi-automatic weapons, training guerrilla warfare tactics, stockpiling weapons, and 50 states participating in paramilitary training. The New York Times says they're violently anti-Semitic, they're rabid anti-communists, they're revisionists in terms of Christianity. The Jews are equated with bankers and communists, and members of Congress are dupes, corrupted government officials. And they say children of Jews are Satan and must be exterminated. That is one of their goals. They were former military men, trained by military men, and the New York Times tries to pass it off as if our retired military are somewhat psychotic. We're using psychotic victims to train well-meaning military people are training psychotics. Now, nothing could be farther from the truth. I mean, that is an outright lie. The military are training people like, say, Joseph Romero of the SLA, who was in Vietnam or Colston Westbrook, and then they're allowed to go in the prisons and meet with police agents like Donald DeFries and Thero Wheeler and train them in ambush, or the men from Vietnam that were with the Manson family at the Spahn Ranch, right next, backs up to the Krupp, German Krupp Ranch in Los Angeles, where they knew they were going to kill. They were trained for killing. They knew where they were going to go. These military men are training these people. And, of course, Charles Watson comes right out of that fabric from Texas, from the Boy Scouts, the one who did the killings that Charles Manson is associated with. This is the gang with headquarters in the Mojave and elsewhere. Now, this group, the Gales group, is called the Ministry of Christ Church. It's known as the Identity, as I say, the Ministry of Christ Church. He's now a reverend. Somebody put up a lot of money for him, and they are called the Identity. Their ideological threat of bigotry, and they're linked. This New York Times story says, to the Posse Comitatus, the Christian Defense League, the Aryan Nations, the Christian Patriotic Defense, the Ku Klux Klan, the Nazi Party. I have a list of 1,800 organizations that they connect with, 1,800, that was published in 1979 with their addresses. If you want it, it's about 20 pages. I can copy it for you. This article tells how the Posse, being extremists and with their dislike and hatred of Catholics, of the president, link up with Gale. The two men work together and speak together, have the same goals and overlap, so that while one family that housed Gordon Call is not a member of the Posse Comitatus, he knows where to go and where to stay, and they have secret meetings around the United States and work together and train together. Now, there was that gun battle in North Dakota, as I say, where two marshals were killed. And then Gordon Call goes south to Arkansas, where he can stay. Now, interesting enough, the federal authorities found him through a piece of advanced equipment, an infrared airplane spotter. I know they have this equipment to look inside of houses to see where people are. And that's how they located Gordon Call, so they could test new equipment and sacrifice him at the same time. And I believe that his cyanide connections or his international connections may have been blown and may even had to do with the links in Kansas to the cyanide case, the Tylenol case. Because remember, Mr. Lewis came from Kansas and had an international organization of export, import, and worked with the Internal Revenue in Kansas. And these people are anti-Internal Revenue, and he had a finger in that, working tax forms and so forth. And he had murdered one man in Kansas and then went north up to Illinois and was photographed in a store. And Mr. Arnold, the fellow who killed one of his witnesses last week, had books on how to put cyanide into bottles and jars. And these people are the experts on cyanide. So it could be that Gordon Call was exterminated as part of this team at the present time, and also testing those new helicopters to photograph him inside the barn. Remember, the SLA was formed for many, many reasons. And one of the things it did at the evening barbecue when six people were murdered on your television was to show the great SWAT team coming in to save the poor in southern Los Angeles in a little district where they could have let them starve to death and come out or blow out their ammunition, and everyone was cleared out. You had to get the SWAT team in all their glory at that particular time. Now, the members of Identity, the people in Arkansas who housed Call, are part of this survivalist movement. The fellow who told the fact that he was a member of Mr. Saxon, of the Birch Society, the Minutemen, the Nazi Party, and so forth, he left them and was one of the founders of the survivalist movement, which includes, as I say, the ambush and the cooking, the killing of people and chopping them up and poisoning them and so forth, and the training that they have around the country. Now, Mr. Call stayed with people from the Identity group, and Mr. Gale, Reverend Gale, right out of the Philippines with Douglas MacArthur and Willoughby, was 60 miles from where Call was killed, and he was with a member of the survivalist group, Mr. Saxon, who's the expert of all these organizations. They were just having a meeting together, of course, coincidentally. The newspaper covers these things, you know, in such a grandiose style. It's just coincidental that they were 60 miles away when Gordon Call was blown up. This Kurt Saxon was meeting with Mr. Gale. And Gale is the interesting character because in the next half hour, I'll show you how he worked with Lauren Hall and William Seymour and the people, Sylvia Odio. He worked with Mr. Eugene Bradley, who Ronald Reagan would not extradite for the grand jury investigating the murder of John Kennedy that took place in New Orleans with Jim Garrison. Gale worked with all of these people. And so this network goes once more from the Philippines to racism, anti-Semitism, the far, far right, and the same characters end up one more time back in Dallas. We'll take a 1-minute break and then get back to that subject.